It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors. Wow, it's that time of year. Gun deer season started this morning, actually, because we're airing at 2 o'clock. And we're going to spend some time talking about all of that on today's episode. And first of all, thanks to all of you for tuning in on the opening day of gun deer season in Wisconsin and wherever you are, because there's different starting dates for different states. We celebrate it here. This is a big day in Wisconsin. Upwards of 600,000 people go into the woods, and got a great guest. He's Dusty Weiss. He's in studio, which is always cool, president of Podcamp Media. But Dusty, first of all, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me.
You're a guy who discovered hunting not when you're like I was like 12. When did you get into it?
Well, I come from hunters on both sides of the family, right? My mom's side of the family, they're big hunters. And then my dad's side of the family, they grew up dairy farmer poor in the Marshfield area. And so for them, hunting wasn't a lifestyle. It was a way to put food on the table back in the day. But my dad never really got into hunting. And so many folks, of course, get introduced to hunting through their dads. And so I started the first 30 years of my life and never set foot in the woods as a hunter. Got to the point where life had slowed down. I had worked as a radio news reporter for years and years.
And radio chops.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. My last stop in radio was at WIOD, the wonderful Isle of Dreams in Miami, Florida.
Nice.
Not a lot of deer hunting.
What kind of radio was that exactly?
News talk station.
Oh, same as us.
Very much so. I was riding the news desk and telling all kinds of crazy stories. Shook LeBron James's hand after he got his first ring.
That's a nice experience.
Interviewing Trayvon Martin's mother the week after he was killed in Sanford, Florida.
Yeah.
So the full gamut of life in Florida there.
So let's talk about the hunting experience.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law, Jeff, had the same thing. His dad didn't hunt or rarely hunted. He got into it in his 40s and now is an avid hunter. As somebody who that's out there listening to the show, that's not the normal experience, especially here in Wisconsin. Typically, kids learn from their parents. You know, you talked about that. But to go out in the woods when you, what age were you exactly?
I was 30 years old.
30 years old?
30 years old the first time I took a gun out in the woods.
So what did that feel like, that experience?
Scary. Like, you don't know what you're doing, and when you don't have someone who's a close hunting mentor for you, you really have to learn all the dumb lessons the hard way. I remember the first time I went out, I was hunting on a friend's dad's land out by Fort Atkinson. And what's the first thing that you learn as a hunter? Preparation for the season starts way before the actual hunt.
Yeah.
I hadn't done any scouting.
Know your environment. Know what's around. Know where the deer at.
Yeah. I had pulled up Google Maps and been like, oh, this would be a good way. And I've read online that you need to work the wind. And so to work the wind, I'm going to use this access trail. Well, it turned out my access trail was straight through a marsh.
Oof.
And so 5 o'clock in the morning, the pitch black. And here I am in water up past my knee boots, just freezing my tuchus off. It was not a great way to get introduced to the sport. But you have to learn the dumb lessons the hard way. And eventually, after years and years and years of kind of trying to put the pieces together and hunting public land, which is, well, Thunderdome,
right?
In a lot of ways, I got my first buck in 2018 when I was then 33.
Do you remember that experience? Because I still remember mine, what it felt like, nervous, shaky sometimes, you know, putting the gun or rifle up.
100%. I was sitting in a blind in a soybean field up in the Polk Kames wildlife area out by Slinger. It was a short drive from Milwaukee, which is why I was working it. And this buck stepped out into the field right after the open. There was flurries coming down. It was a cold, snowy Wisconsin morning. And I got him at about 220 yards, drew a bead on him, and pop. And he jumped up and he bucked. And looking back at it, I'm sure that first shot hit. But I didn't have the experience to be able to track it, and so racked it, sent another one. I'm pretty sure that one missed, but racked it again, and he dropped after the third one. But I found two good holes right through the lungs, and so, but again, you're sitting there, you're looking at your watch, you got to wait 15 minutes, and you're like, did I do it right? Did I mess anything up? It's a terrifying responsibility that first time.
I'm coming into it as a grown-up. What would you tell other people who maybe have not hunted yet? maybe they're in their 40s or 50s even, about making that first step, taking that first walk into the woods and making the decision that you're going to engage yourself with any kind of hunting, but specifically deer hunting?
I'll actually turn it on its ear a little bit, because the first people that I want to talk to about that are the people who currently hunt. Because speaking as someone who got into it later in life, who didn't have a parental role model to teach me these kind of things, speaking now as someone who's been doing it for 10 years and is very deeply engrossed in the culture, we have got to open this sport up to more people who come into it from a non-traditional way. Because most folks won't stick with it. Most folks won't trudge through the marsh at 5 a.m. and learn it the hard way. We need to make our sport more accessible, or it is going to continue shrinking and contracting the way that the demographics already show that it is. And so my advice to people who are curious about it, who want to get into it for the first time, find yourself a mentor and stick to their side. But there's got to be mentors out there. There've got to be people who open it up, and not just to other folks who look like them either, but folks who come from a background.
That's a great point.
That's different from theirs.
Absolutely. One of the things we were talking about before we started recording was finding joy in hunting. And you made a comment that stuck with me about social media. And I've noticed this. I actually done a couple segments on previous episodes about this. The culture of trail cams sharing their videos and or pictures of the big bucks. Weave me that storyline and why you think social media is sort of playing a role in that.
So look, Steve, I'm 40 years old. That makes me a millennial. And as such, I carry with myself the social media burdens of being a millennial, right? We were the space monkeys that first got shot into space and went out into this social media landscape that we're stuck in. I get targeted with all sorts of social media posts, Instagram reels, that kind of stuff, of these guys going out into the woods, taking their 180-inch buck, and they've got not just the pictures of the grip and grin, but they've got the actual video of them tagging it with their bow or something like that.
It's all over reels right now on my feed.
It's all over, and it's great watching it. It gets your blood pumping. It gets you excited about the season. But I'm seeing more and more of these guys come out and post, guys, I'm just burned out. Like, I'm not finding the joy in hunting that I used to right now. And it's because I don't hunt. Well, this is my theory. It's because they don't hunt for themselves anymore. At the end of the day, hunting is a deeply personal, I would say even a spiritual thing that you go out and you do because you find joy in it. And if instead of going out and staring at the trees and thinking big thoughts and finding the joy that you once found, you're worried about getting the perfect camera angle, about lugging all that equipment out there, about making sure that your cameraman isn't making so much noise that he spooks every deer in the woods, you're not going to find the same joy that you found in that.
Yeah, that's a good message.
It's about getting back to our roots.
I want to take a break here, but I want to ask you in the next segment about CWD, because you've had a couple of direct experiences with that. I have not yet, but I had Paul Smith on, who I will be hunting with on opening weekend, and it's a problem. There's things you can do about it and steps you can take, but I want to explore that with my guest, Dusty Weiss. He's my guest on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, right here on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. My guest, Dusty Weiss. He's the president of PodCamp. Is it PodCamp Media?
PodCamp Media.
Yes. I mean, we'll get to some of that, but you shared some stories with me before we sat down, and one of them is CWD, chronic wasting disease. And when I had Paul Smith on the show, Outdoors Editor, Journal Sentinel, we talked about all the opportunities to test, which is recommended if you shoot a deer in Wisconsin. Get it tested. There's sites everywhere. I think it's a pretty easy process. But you have direct experience with that. Tell me about it.
So about 4 years ago, I was lucky enough to be able to purchase my little 40-acre scrap of heaven out in Richland County, Wisconsin. It's about halfway from Spring Green, Richland Center. Pretty country
nice,
out there.
Nice, hills. Beautiful
area. I've got 380 feet of elevation change from the bottom of my valley to the top of my ridge, and it's my favorite spot. But it is also square in the middle of the CWD hot zone in Wisconsin. They estimate that up to 50% of bucks in that part of the state are infected with CWD.
Wow.
And so looking back at that, it was only a matter of time until I got one for the first time. But ever since I started hunting, I've been pretty careful about making sure to test my deer. We've got young kids. There's no known cases of CWD jumping from a deer to a human, but we want to be sure of it. And I want to help. I want to do my part to control the spread of CWD because our deer are a resource in this state.
So the recommendation, if your deer tests positive, is to do what exactly?
They recommend to dispose of the meat in a dumpster. They don't want you to just go put it out back into the woods because then you're introducing those contaminants, those prions
makes
back
the
into
worse,
the habitat.
Actually.
And so you're supposed to put it into a dumpster when you get it. And so last year I was out sitting on opening day of gun deer season and I did the unthinkable. I got really cold and I came in and I took a nap. And I woke up from my nap on the couch and was getting ready to go back out. And I look out the window where I've got my car parked, and there's this 8-point buck standing there sniffing the back of my car, the basket where I put my deer.
I've hunted for a long time. There's so many versions of that same story that hunters could, we could fill an hour show with just versions of that.
You nap in the stand, right?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
never go in for
you're
the
doing
nap.
Something else. All of a sudden, look, there's this huge buck standing like 6 feet from you. It's like, how in the world did that happen?
Right next to my house.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kind of swore at myself, but I also figured, all right, deer keep to a routine. He's probably going to come back. And so the next day, I stayed out in the stand. I set a stand that was really close to the house and was waiting for him. And sure enough, he comes down that hill. But he was just, it would have been a decent-sized frame, a decent rack on him, but kind of skinny and just really acting a little bit dopey. And so I had my suspicions from the start. He laid down behind a tree and napped for 90 minutes.
Wow.
And I had to wait in a crouch facing the wrong way in my stand for 90 minutes waiting for him to jump up. But he did. I popped him. He dropped immediately. Took him in for testing. And a couple weeks later, I get the positive results back, and my heart just sank. Like, that is, to go through that emotional roller coaster and know that you're not going to get to enjoy the fruits of your labor, it was a little bit heartbreaking.
That was my next question. So, for all the hunters who are now, they're sort of piqued interest, because I assume, and I think Paul sort of affirmed this, that a lot of hunters still not testing, which I don't think is a good idea. We know the risks, obviously. We know that there's not that connection yet between deer and humans, but it's something that should be on everyone's mind. Have you shot and consumed deer on your property that you did test and they were okay? So is it all the deer have CWD by you, or do you not know?
No, there's plenty of deer. I mean, I've eaten more than half a dozen deer
okay,
so off of that property.
You can have both. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. But here's the thing that I think the DNR needs to be a lot louder about. When you hit a CWD deer and it tests positive, they give you that tag back. And that tag is good not only for the rest of that hunting season, which obviously 9-day gun deer,
right,
getting a tag back 2 weeks later isn't going to do you a lot of good. That buck tag is good for the entire next hunting season as well. So this year, I went out into the woods with 3 buck tags.
Interesting.
And the one that's refunded from last year can be used either for bow buck or gun buck. And so I think DNR needs to be shouting that from the rooftops, because that's going to get a lot more people testing these things.
Real quick, before I let you go, we are going to talk about PodCamp Media in a second, but favorite thing you love about deer camps?
I mean, it's got to be the stories, right? The old
the BS stories that people tell.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting to spend time with like-minded people from all across the state, from all across the political spectrum. I have had some of the most insightful political discussions at deer camp, because we all have a shared heritage, but we might have very, very different views on what's going on in Madison, in Washington, in Milwaukee. And so I think deer camp is a great place to bring together the folks from the country, the folks from the city, who we don't intermingle a lot, and just get together and talk about what's really important to us.
All right, Dusty Weiss joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. Tell me, you're the president of PodCamp Media. What do you guys do?
We are a podcast production company proudly based here in Milwaukee for the last 6.5 years. Folks come to us, typically corporate clients. They've got an important story that they want to tell. We just help them tell it. And I've got my background in radio and broadcasting, doing the kind of thing that you do now. And we help use those good storytelling chops to help them accomplish their goals in the audio medium. Also, a lot of short-form video now on the social media spectrum.
And if people are interested, how can they find you?
They can check out podcampmedia.com. Otherwise, check out our flagship podcast, my very favorite. It's a show called Lead Balloon. You can see me nearly get sick in the backseat of an F-18 Blue Angels fighter jet over the Gulf of Mexico and anything in between.
The wildness of what you just said, you're the second person today, and I recorded something earlier, that had an experience with the Blue Angels.
No kidding.
That's random, but happens in radio.
Would you believe there are actually more people in the world today who have Super Bowl rings than have ridden in the backseat of an F-18 Blue Angels fighter jet?
Yeah, I would believe that. Dusty Weiss, pleasure. Let's talk again, because you have the great stories, and certainly you know how to tell them. So I want to get you back on the WTMJ Outdoors podcast.
I'll do it anytime, Steve. Thanks so much.
Happy hunting. This is WTMJ Outdoors. Lots more to come on today's show. Thanks to the folks at Outdoor Living Unlimited who make it all possible. Lots more coming up, 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Well, we're going to transition at some point to snow and all those snow sports and recreational opportunities in the great state of Wisconsin. Who better to talk to than Greg Fisher, general manager at Little Switzerland in Slinger, Wisconsin. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so I know your place. I've skied there in the past, not recently because I'm an old guy now, but not that old people can't ski. Tell us about Little Switzerland and some of the history and sort of the cool things about your place out there in Slinger.
Yeah, you know, this hill's been around since 1941. It's one of the older ones here in the state of Wisconsin, and it's about 20 minutes outside of Milwaukee and right off of 41. And it's a great little hill, and it's perfect for you know, adventurous that are experienced skiers. It's got some nice steeps. It's got a great park system for kids, terrain parks. And then we have a really good beginner area with what we call conveyor carpets, or a lot of people call them magic carpets, because you don't have to take your skis off. You can just get them on, get right onto the conveyor, takes you right up to the top. They're kind of similar to the things you'll see in an airport that will move you along if you have to catch a flight. But these guys go up about 300 feet or so.
I want to give you a couple chances to tell people where to find out about Little Switzerland, your website address or contact information.
Yeah, littleswitz.com, littleswitz.com is where you're going to find all the information. And it's constantly updated, gives you the snow report if we're making snow or if we're receiving snow. Hopefully Mother Nature provides us with some natural snowfall in abundance this year. But as long as it's cold, that's really all we need, because we have a superior snowmaking system all across the entire hill.
I was going to ask you about that, because obviously we had some snow challenge season. I was talking to some resort owners in northern Wisconsin. They've been impacted by the snow machine, snowmobile, lack of the season, really, a couple years ago, none at all, and very little this year. So when do you typically, let's say a normal, typical snow season, when do you start cranking out making snow?
Yeah, I mean, we've already made snow now three nights. The first couple nights are really a good test for us. We wanted to get some snow down. And then we made snow Sunday night this past week. And we're just kind of waiting for it to be consistently cold. You know, we'll make snow now at any time that it's 28 degrees or less. Really what we're looking for is cold temperatures and dry humidity. The better, the drier the air is and the wet bulb temperature, the better snow we can make. But right now we're looking to build up our base, and then, we'll get the good stuff on top of that. So, We can always make snow at any given point throughout the course of the season if we get a natural, you know, a warm-up every once in a while that we always do in the wintertime. And then we always got a cold snap, too, that usually comes around right in the middle of January. At least that's been the consistency for the last couple of years. So we'll be right there ready to go as soon as Mother Nature turns that that temperature gauge down a little bit.
Greg Fisher joining us from Little Switzerland in Slinger, Wisconsin. All right, so I grew up in the era of downhill skiing, spent a lot of time at ski hills around the state, Wausau, northern Wisconsin, Little Switzerland. Is it more snowboarding now than skiing? How does that shake out?
You know, snowboarding got a lot of popularity back in the late 80s, early 90s, and kind of continued into, you know, I would say the 2000s. Skiing, though, noticed that snowboarding was becoming, you know, quite popular. And the ski businesses, the ski manufacturers saw that, and they started to realize that, hey, we can do this, too. We can make some cool skis with graphics, and really what took off with snowboarding was the terrain park element. And now ski manufacturers are kind of on the rebound with offering a huge variety of skis, whether they're rockered skis, which have more of a tapered end that allows people actually to spin around, they can ski backwards. And so, you know, the snowboarding kind of took skiing to another level. And, you know, snowboarding is still popular, very much so. It really depends on your interest. But I would say there definitely are still more skiers of this world than there are snowboarders out there. And I think the trend is actually going back towards skiing. But like I said, snowboarding is still incredibly popular.
Tell me about some of the events or things you have planned out there this snow season.
Yeah, we have a big charity event that we do every year. In February, it's a big air event where skiers and snowboarders jump off of a big air, try to pull tricks. That comes in and goes towards a charity that's local here. All the money is donated, and then we have, at the end of the ski season, we do a pond skim, which is really a lot of fun. Skiers and snowboarders come down a hill and they try to skim, like water skiing or so of sorts, across a pond.
Wow.
And people do it in costume. So that's a lot of entertaining excitement. And we're actually working with the town of Slinger this year, and we're going to host a winter carnival of sorts towards the end of February. And we're going to have a cardboard sled race. So basically the rules of that is you build a sled out of cardboard and duct tape and zip ties, and that's all that you can use. Of course, you can paint it. We encourage people to theme their sleds and, you know, dress in costume and, you know, add pieces of flair, per se, to come down. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So our events tend to be a little bit more towards February or so. We're going to be kicking off the season here, hopefully right around Thanksgiving or shortly thereafter. You know, we host a lot of racing at night. You know, the night skiing here is really what everybody loves, because it's just a lot of fun to ski under the lights here. We have a huge lookout tower that we light up, and it's pretty iconic in the region. You can see it from pretty far away.
Yeah, anybody that's driven by at night, it looks spectacular. We're talking to Greg Fisher, General Manager of Little Switzerland in Slinger, Wisconsin. We'll take a break here on WTMJ Outdoors. Of course, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Lots more to come on WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. My guest, Greg Fisher, General Manager, Little Switzerland, Slinger, Wisconsin, talking snowboarding, skiing, all the new things happening in that industry. So let's talk big picture. Your industry, your business, we talked about the snow challenges. We talked about some of the technology changes. What's the buzz in your industry, Greg?
I would say the buzz is that, you know, skiing and snowboarding on the last 3 years, and basically the last 5 years since the COVID pandemic, has really taken off. It, you know, a lot of people during that pandemic, they wanted to get outside and did a great job across the industry, across the country, of welcoming that. Because, you know, people wanted to be outside, they wanted to enjoy doing activities, and it was a safe way to go about doing it. You know, I think the National Ski Areas Association did a great job of embracing the outdoors. And we've seen a nice uptick in visitation, not only here, but across the country. The ski industry as a whole for the past 3 years have broken records with the amount of skiers that have been visiting the hills. And we've seen it here at Little Switz and across Wisconsin. I mean, all of the ski areas have done really well. We did have a blip a little bit 2 years ago with really a warm, mild winter. But even in that year, across the industry was still a stellar season. So hopefully the Midwest can rebound and have a little bit more of a traditional year. I think the last two have been a little less than desirable in terms of snowfall. But like I said, as long as it's cold, we really can do a good job of maintaining the snowfall on the ground. But anytime that there's snow in the backyards of people's houses, it always is the best marketing that any ski resort can do.
I think I saw a long-term weather forecast. It looks like we might have a dip in temperatures in December, January. So that's good news for your industry. How about you? Are you a skier or a snowboarder? How'd you get into the industry?
Yeah, so I've been doing this for about 25 years. I'm a skier. I do know how to snowboard. I get out on a snowboard every once in a while. I have two young boys who are diehard skiers, but they enjoy to switch it over every once in a while and laugh a little bit, because it's definitely going from one to another is not something a lot of people do. But I've been doing this for a while now. I started in Vermont at a place called Mount Snow, and I've run ski resorts in Ohio, Wisconsin now, two different ones, and been in part of some pretty big ski conglomerates running marketing. So it's my passion. I have a pretty big tattoo on my right arm. It's got a chairlift. It's got snowflakes
there
in it.
Go.
So this is my life, you know. So it's it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. I have I've been blessed to work with some amazing people, including the team here at Little Switz. They're great, they're energetic, and they're really excited for the season, as am I.
I know we'll get listeners to ask, do you provide lessons out there for those, you know, new skiers, snowboarders who want to get started in the industry?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we have everything from kids programs on weekends, which was called the Academy. It's a three, four-week program, depending on if they have a cold day or a rain day for some reason and they can't get out there. We have a rain makeup day, but then we offer private lessons, and those can be for adults or children. It doesn't matter. Those are a little bit more one-on-one kind of program. We have over 100 ski instructors that work for us every year. And then we have another 120 ski patrollers that are out on the slopes, and those guys are making sure that everybody's safe out there while they're enjoying the slope, the snow and the lifts and everything.
Well, Greg Fisher, general manager, Little Switzerland Slinger, I wish you good snow luck this season, and let's talk again down the road, maybe some of those great events you got coming up when we get to the real cold and snowy parts of our winter season here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to chat more with you about it. And you know, everybody likes to pray for snow. I like to pray for cold, because like I said, right. we really just need it to be cold, and we'll be good. And I hope everybody out there has a wonderful and safe, happy holidays.
All right. And real quick, if they want to get your information, find out about all the stuff you just talked about, how do they find you?
Yeah, the best place to go is our website, littleswitz.com, littleswitz.com.
All right, happy holidays, Greg Fisher. Enjoy the season, and we'll talk down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, listen, WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, right here on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. It is always interesting and fun to talk to everybody in our city and states about the outdoors, but we're going to go indoors a little bit here. We got some great friends locally here at Kegels Inn, and we are lucky enough to be joined by Julian, one of the owners there. Thanks for coming on WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So I heard about this, and I thought this is sort of an interesting thing. We have done things like this before on the show. American Express You have been honored a couple times, apparently, as a small business, and in your case, small restaurant. It's all part of that Small Business Saturday, which is coming up on the 29th of the month, and this is about a week ahead of that. So when you think about yourself, Kegel's Inn, historic restaurants, how does that tie into the Small Business Day and celebration of those things?
Well, Kegel's Inn couldn't be more of a small business to support on a day like Small Business Saturday. We are capstoning our 100-year anniversary this year, so we're kind of wrapping up as we turn 101 on Repeal Day, December 5th. But this is a story of history and legacy and also just a major involvement in the community to keep a place like Kegel's Inn open for 100 years. Very small percentage of restaurants last even 25 years, and to hit the centennial mark is just a testament to the customer base and Milwaukee's German heritage and the flavors that we serve in our kitchens.
Tell our audience about the family part of this, because I was lucky enough to stop by there last year and we chatted briefly and about just the amazing story of your family in this restaurant in our community.
Well, you know, many people are familiar with Wheel and Sprocket, and Chris Kegel was my dad. But actually, his grandpa is the one who started Kegel's Inn in 1924. And so they had a little bit of a rebellious past. They were opening right during Prohibition. So they were brewing beer in the basement, serving, 5-cent whiskeys with a lunch order. And the sheer fact that in 1924, that was the height of Prohibition, so that we even survived Prohibition in the first place was amazing, of course. And then they really had to focus on, the community involvement. So my great grandpa, I'm fourth generation now, and he was a legacy in the West Dallas area. I mean, they opened up a beautiful bar, really high quality craftsmanship through and through. We still have the original murals, the original floors, the original bar, the seats, the tables. Everything is from the 1920s, and you just don't get places like this anymore. If you tried to build it, it just wouldn't feel quite right. And the fact that Kegel's has survived this long has just been it's been phenomenal.
One of the reasons I thought you'd be a great interview for the program, WTMJ Outdoors, this is part of that American Express Main Street American. I certainly think that Kegel's Inn defines that. And how did you make the connection with American Express?
Yeah, so actually, my degree is in urban planning, and so that's sort of like the language you speak between city and citizen. And the development office of West Dallas actually brought this grant to me right during the height of Prohibition and right during the height of the pandemic. So this was like a really like large injection of dollars that we could use to keep this business going, and we were certainly grateful for it.
Innovation's a big part of what you guys do. That's why, I mean, obviously you've been around for 100 years. Sort of define that for people, how you've grown, what you've done on the innovation side. I know that during the pandemic, you did some really cool things with some outdoor structures to sort of bring that experience outside so people could feel safe and secure even in the midst of the pandemic or shortly after. I would imagine that the grant program for American Express and just the innovative work that you guys do at Kegel's Inn is all part of that, the magic of why 100 years is even possible.
Yeah, certainly. When we were in those tough times, it was really clear to me that we needed an outdoor presence for Kegel's Inn. We didn't have any outdoor dining. We didn't really have a beer garden. And when you think of German restaurant, you think beer garden, you think communal tables, you think Hofbräu umbrellas, and we were lacking that. So we really focused on opening up the War Memorial Beer Garden as like a place for people to gather along Milwaukee's lakefront. And then also Kegel's Inn developed a beer garden outside in the street, and we ended up doing a whole street takeover where now an empty side street is now a flourishing part of our business model to even just keep us succeeding and surviving.
And sort of spreading that success, American Express can, if you apply, apply a $20,000 grant to foster community connections in neighborhoods. You're certainly part of that program. On Small Business Saturday, November 29th this year, American Express will donate $1 to the grant program for future grants. Julian, for other small businesses to sort of thrive, and it is what is always a challenging market. As somebody who runs a place where people can eat and drink and celebrate whatever it is, from birthdays to anniversaries to just celebrating a night out, how have you been so successful? What's the magic of Kegel's Inn? What would make somebody want to go there?
Well, the first part is that we have these stained glass windows that keep onlookers from looking in. And that was huge during Prohibition because it was, you know, they were drinking beer when it was illegal. right. But it's got this mystique that you have to walk in through that door to get these authentic and genuine vibes from the old country. And you attach an old world menu with food cooked right from scratch and this like really just warm feeling of belonging. That's one part of it. And then the food is amazing, of course. And so that brings you back. And then our staff have been there for 30, 40 years sometimes. So then you start to recognize our service staff and our managers, and then it develops relationships, and then it just it transcends into so much more than just the food memory. It's the memory of the entire operation becomes part of how you want to celebrate the next birthday or anniversary or, you know, even memorial. We sort of have a product from start of life, from baby's first fish fry, you know, all the way through to every special occasion you have.
Julian Cagle joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. So for every dollar spent on Small Business Saturday, American Express will donate $1 to the grant program for those future grants. I love the partnership. I love the fact that all of your staff and everybody at Cagle's Inn is sort of a celebration of what is so cool about our area in the state, but really the whole state. It's just it's a great story, and congratulations on 100 years. And I love the partnership, and we have to celebrate Small Business Saturday. This show airs on a Saturday. I thought perfect tie-in to have you on the show. So I appreciate you coming on WTMJ Outdoors.
Steve, appreciate it. See you all soon.
Hey, real quick, before I let you go, if somebody wants to find out about a Cagle's Inn that maybe doesn't live here, how can they find you?
Yeah, easy. Kegelsinn.com is our sort of landing page for all things.
And that's K-E-G-E-L. Yes.
Yeah, K-E-G-E-L-S-I-N-N.com.
Perfect. Thank you, Julian.
Steve, thanks. Appreciate you.
All right. Lots more to come on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Country road,
take me home. As always, thanks for listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. I always start with this at the end. If you would like to suggest a topic, have some feedback for WTMJ Outdoors, or maybe a guest or an organization that you think would make a great guest on the program, just send me an email to steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D, at WTMJ.com. That's steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D, at WTMJ.com. We had a great show today on this Saturday, and things are cooling down. We got, obviously, the start of hunting season for gun deer season after we've had the bow season for deer, but we're going to transition at some point. We did that on the show today. Although we started with Dusty Weiss from PodCamp Media, a millennial hunter giving his thoughts on how he hunts and a little bit on the impact of social media in our hunting world now. And I've seen this as well with the advent of trail cams and everybody sharing their pics and all that stuff. Go on my Facebook page lately, and it's a constant set of reels about people shooting big bucks across the country, so it's not a bad thing. Greg Fisher joined us from Little Switzerland in Slinger, Wisconsin. Believe it or not, so we're going to be talking about snow skiing pretty soon, and as Greg told us a couple times in our interview on the program on WTMJ Outdoors today, he likes the dry air because that means they can make snow. Dry, cool air, regular snow, natural snow is cool, but they can make it, and they can have a lot of fun out there in Slinger. So if it's lessons or some of their great events, I'm really digging that cardboard sled event they got coming up next year, early next year in the winter. I might actually go check that out. So thanks to Greg Fisher, general manager at Little Switzerland, for joining us. And we wrapped it up with a conversation with Julian Cagle. Not really outdoors, but a celebration of a very cool thing in Wisconsin. Cagle's Inn celebrating 100 years in business, going all the way back to the early 1900s. And they are great friends of the show. And Cagle's Inn, awesome place. Authentic German food, made from scratch. The environment's incredible. Think Germany. Think a trip to Germany, because that's what it feels like when you get to West Dallas and you go visit Cagle's Inn. So thanks to all my guests on WTMJ Outdoors. We'll do it again next Saturday. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Outdoor Living Unlimited. WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.